really got my wheels turning on computers and how do you build them. And that's kind of where everything started, from a curiosity perspective on these things that can produce video games. It's pretty fun.
Commodore 64 is a legend of early computers and, you know, lots of different things and capabilities that people would do on that computer.
And they are Keegan Clokey, principal consultant and technical architect, and Subi Philip, partner and lead architect, both working at Emery Consulting. And I'm Julian Duque, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here in the podcast, we share stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we are going to talk with Keegan and Subi about building chatbots with Apex. But before, we will start, just as we left off, and we often do, with the early year. Keegan, tell me about your first experience with a computer.
Oh, first experience with a computer. Oh, that was it's a long time ago. We actually had floppy disks, and my dad bought a personal computer. It was a big deal for our family, probably one of the first people to have one. And he set up in his bedroom, kind of doing the whole work remote thing just a little bit differently back then. Mm-hmm. And he had this one game on there that he would play, which was Solitaire. And I was a little bit too young to play Solitaire, but there was this other game called Minesweeper.
Oh, yes.
That game was one of the first experiences I had. And I think this was probably back when I was maybe 6 or 8 years old. That really got my wheels turning on computers and how do you build them. And that's kind of where everything started, from a curiosity perspective on these things that can produce video games. It's pretty fun.
Beautiful. What is your first memory, Subi?
Oh, my first memory is back in the 80s. We used the Commodore 64, which is similar to Keegan's. We use floppy disks, and same thing. We play lots of early video games like Spy Hunter, which was a car racing game, which just was just so much fun to kind of play. And you kind of feel the passion and the power of computers at that time, even though that was very early. Commodore 64 is a legend of early computers and, you know, lots of different things and capabilities that people would do on that computer.
I never had the opportunity to play with one of those. Always wanted, but that, where I grew up, that was just for rich people. I didn't have access to those. And for both of you, how was your first experience building something, like working with a software or creating a program?
Absolutely. So for me, my first experience building software, well, I actually started building after one computer. My dad needed to use that for work. Then he bought a second computer when the first one, quote unquote, died. Then he bought a third computer when that one, quote unquote, died. And by this point, I was realizing that we had three junked computers that all needed one piece replaced. Mm-hmm. So that kind of got me onto the hardware kick of how do these things work. But when it comes to programming, I saw this video in 1999 called The Matrix.
Oh, yes.
That clued me into a whole world of ones and zeros that I didn't know existed before. And that drove me to ask questions about computer programming. So I told my parents, hey, I know that we're not a math and science family. We never have. We're very liberal arts focused. And I told them, hey, I want to learn about Java. There's this class and it seems pretty cool and I can build video games, like my first experience. I was like, I want to have the opportunity to do that. So I took a Java class, and the IDE we used back then was called BlueJ.
BlueJ?
Yeah. Very, very old school IDE that was very click and drag functionality. But I was able to build out a video game for myself that kind of follows the same line of Dig Dug. If you've ever played that video game where you run around and try to blow up little ground creatures. So I was able to build that for like a little capstone project in high school. And that kind of started me down that path of being interested and aware of computer programming, how it all worked.
Nice. It's great how pop culture movies influence us. For me, for example, was 1995 Hackers movie. Changed my whole perspective of how interacting with computers. And what about you, Subi?
Yeah, my experience was back in high school. So I actually went to a high school that was targeted for science and engineering. And in there, they actually had us take a class in Pascal. So I that was my first entry into actually coding and building something, and learning like just programming concepts was fairly new at that time. And it was really exciting and interesting to see that. And what ended up happening is, you know, I entered into a science competition where we had to develop something. And what I ended up developing was in Pascal, I wrote a program to do an animation of a chemistry or a chemical bond. Mm-hmm. So we programmed this and very early animation capabilities of programming the ability to put in two chemicals and putting and animating the ability for those chemicals to come together and bond in a visual format. And it was really exciting and challenging and figuring out how to actually do this with Pascal. How do you write loops? How do you animate the screen? And how do you then, you know, display this as a demo in this science fair, which is pretty cool. I ended up winning third place in that science fair, which was pretty nice. And I got a lot of feedback from my computer programming instructor on how to improve my program, but it was still great.
Nice. So he's been an overachiever ever since high school.
That's the way to go. That's the way to go. And fast forward into the future, how was the first interaction or how you got into the Salesforce ecosystem?
So for me, I actually started my career in CRM using an older CRM program called Siebel. My company at the time was switching their CRM into the latest and greatest platform, right? So we went from Siebel and we actually evaluated several CRM products, and one of them was Salesforce. And this was back in 2005 is where I first came across Salesforce. We evaluated it and selected it to be the new Salesforce platform. So that was very, very early, which, you know, it was on Salesforce Classic, but it was this concept of doing something in the cloud, storing our data there, having everything run in a browser instead of an actual application sitting on your computer. It was very different at that time, but it was great. It was this new technology at that time that we wanted to try to leverage and identify how do we customize this to actually do something for our company, which is really interesting.
You have experienced quite the evolution then.
I have. I've seen lots of iterations and versions of Salesforce going from Classic to Aura to now Lightning, which is cool.
Nice. And what about you, Keegan?
So for me, introduction to... I actually had a deviation when I was going through college. I took a CS, a computer science class. And I hated it so much. I hated the professor so much that I chose to choose every class to never take a computer science throughout the rest of my collegiate experience.
Wow.
And graduate with an electrical engineering degree and just found a way through to not have to take any computer programming classes. Fast forward a year, I find myself jumping into SQL, C#, and C++ programming languages for a company called Quorum Business Solutions, and did that for a while in the oil and gas field, transitioned over to another on-prem solution that uses the same technologies in energy trading and risk management. And then eventually I came over to MRE Consulting and I met this guy named Subi Philip who, said, "Hey, Keegan, have you ever heard of this software? It's called Salesforce." And the only thing that jogged my memory on what Salesforce was a huge IPO, NASDAQ. I can't remember if it's NASDAQ or S&P 500, but huge splash. And I was like, it's probably vaporware. I'm sure it's not like software. Because I was used to the on-prem stuff using databases. I'm like, how does a cloud work? That's just ridiculous technology.
Yeah.
So Subi was like, "You should go on Trailhead, check it out for me." So I was like, I'll appease him. I'll take a look. And he was like, "Guess what? We've got a client who needs some help building out a enterprise solution for within Salesforce for CPQ." I was like, "Okay, first I got to figure out what Salesforce is. Now I got to figure out what CPQ is." And I started using Trailhead to learn everything I could about the platform and the technology. And I got super jazzed about it. He's like, "All right, we're doing it. We're going to implement this for a client." And that was the start of this journey of about 5 years in Salesforce.
5 years. So here you are. You also experience quite the evolution. That's amazing.
So let's get into today's topic. We are going to be talking about the art of building a chatbot using Apex. And this is very relevant right now, especially in this new AI world. We are seeing AI everywhere, building AI solutions. And one of the most common applications of these AI solutions is a chatbot. But how can we build one of those using our programming language, which is Apex? Tell us more about the experience you have doing so.
Yeah, I mean, when we start designing a chatbot, you know, we really start with trying to identify what's that business goal in mind, right? What are we trying to achieve and serve through this chatbot, right? And that's really important to understand as we're trying to solve some type of business challenge, right? And once we identify that, we kind of map that into, you know, how much information can we surface through this chatbot, right? What type of use case is that? When we design that, we integrate design that chatbot with backend processes that we use Apex for. So Apex will go and build a lot of that logic around how do we query the data that we're trying to surface through this chatbot? How do we build logic in processing of information? How do we make sure that the information we're sharing is really secure? And most importantly, how do we surface that back up through a chatbot to a consumer or a user of that chatbot so that it looks very seamless to them? It looks very user-friendly, right? And when we deal with chatbots, it's very important to design it with like that user experience in mind. It should be very simple to them. They should not be aware that there's a whole bunch of Apex in the background. So it's kind of an art of how do we design this with all this capability in the background with Apex and, you know, other tools that we have at our fingertips, and then kind of surfacing that back up into this product, right?
Yeah, and you can also leverage artificial intelligence from like a learning language model or a large language model experience of having it establish an understanding of why might the customer be calling in or chatting with this chatbot or this interface between your company and the outside world and all of the customers. And you can also establish intent in the message if you are using an AI model to establish, okay, I know what I can guess what they're going to ask about. I can guess or I can start understanding what their intents are by the way that their tone is in their communications. I can also then at the end of it, process the recording and figure out what exactly do they want. Let me serve them something that our company believes is a good solution to this person's problem so that the experience is a much better one for that customer. So there's a lot of different ways, but Subi is absolutely right. The design is the most important aspect, and knowing what you're going to build prior to starting to build out the Apex and the Lightning Web components that you're going to service within that app and kind of know that intent of what is this chatbot designed to do and what functions is it going to serve and how do we leverage the existing technologies with out-of-the-box Einstein bots with all these flexible capabilities like Apex and Lightning Web components to kind of build out that whole solution that really drives a lot of value for a implementation.
And I think the early iterations of the chatbot started with this menu-based bot, right? It would be a bot where it would say press or select one or the first option or whatever these options were, right? And as we see this new evolution of AI and kind of engaging the customer, we're seeing chatbots move more toward that AI bot, right? Where it's using things like natural language processing to have more of a natural conversation with the person using the bot where they can say, hey, how can I help you? Instead of saying, select from our menu, right? And that makes a big difference in that user experience and it makes it more friendly. And we see a higher adoption of people trying to use the bot because it goes right to what they're looking for instead of somebody having to hunt down a solution to their problem.
Yes, yeah, so we just came from, I'm not sure if you have seen this meme that compares ML or AI with just a bunch of if-else statements.
Yep.
We just came from chatbots that were just pretty much a state machine now to chatbots that can have way more natural ways of communicating and also retrieving data from multiple sources through AI. So the evolution also has been pretty powerful.
Yeah, it becomes a human-like conversation, which makes it much more easier for someone to use. And like we said, in the background, it's pulling in all this information from all these different sources, whether it's the web or whether it's through Apex pulling out a Salesforce or even other data sources. It becomes seamless coming back to the user of that chatbot.
And I'm not going to lie, I hated chatbots a couple of years ago. And just recently, I've started using them a lot more to get to agents and to get through a company's processes quicker. And I can tell you across the board, people are getting a lot smarter on the design of these things and so much more valuable from a time perspective because it has those AI intense, what is this person looking to do? And it's so much better at processing it and going to retrieve information, understanding that information, and then providing the right responses that would usually take an agent or a rep who's maybe on the other side of a chat conversation time to review everything. How many times have you called in? What were your intents when you called in before? Do you have any open cases? Do you have a product that's waiting on? This really allows you to distill a whole lot of information very, very quickly and then surface it back to the client without having to go through the human element of understanding, reasoning, logic patterns. It really speeds up that whole process. So if you're able to build that intent model and surface that customer's information faster, you actually have a better experience than going through a live agent, which is a really cool progression of the technology.
With AI, we have a lot of freedom in terms of the interaction that the user and the chatbot is having. But how can we prevent, for example, toxicity? Let's say the model starts acting or behaving irrational or is responding aggressively to our customers, or also how to prevent hallucinations. Those are a couple of most of the common issues that we experience today with generative AI. How to properly prevent these while designing and building a chatbot?
Yeah, I think especially with Salesforce chatbots, we have intents that we would design. So when a user of the chatbot asks a question, we would try to map that question to a predefined set of intents that we built within the chatbot that says, hey, this intent, they're asking about a certain piece of information, like, hey, they want to pay their bill. We create an intent around their bill and kind of show and surface a much more structured response, right? We try not with the chatbot, we're very careful of just providing open-ended responses coming back from like an AI model, right? Some of those AI responses need to be cleansed, need to be qualified before they kind of send back to a user, especially in an automated fashion. Mm-hmm. So we really try to design any type of question back to an intent with a structured set of responses. And that could still come back in an NLP type of experience, so like a human-like response, but it is a structured response so that we know that we're not trying to provide back toxicity or a response that would cause a, you know, insult or I guess offend the user or provide an incorrect response. So they're very, it seems like it's an open response, but it is a very structured kind of process when we design that chatbot and those interactions going back and forth.
Yeah. And there's also a lot of interesting thoughts around how you can utilize Apex to store some of the information about that one conversation with somebody. And you can provide it a feedback to say, here's this point in the conversation. We asked the user, did this solve your problem? And with that information that you start getting back, you can start building a data model to say, this was the progression of this chat. What was the outcome? Did it solve their problem? And you can even use an AI model to train on that data analytics that you've captured through that chat experience. So you're now allowing a learning model or artificial intelligence model to determine, now I've got all this information about these chats. I have a response from the customer to say, did this solve what I'm looking for? You can then utilize that as an analysis to then generate different intents and kind of keep a pipeline of, hey, this is the most affected intent that's been presented. We might want to use this and incorporate this in the next iteration of this chatbot. I usually don't recommend using that output and just automatically having it learn itself, because you're always going to want a human feedback element to it to say, okay, yes, let's utilize this next functionality, because AI can get a little squirrely and you want to stop toxicity from it telling itself what it thinks is the best option.
Yeah. And if we don't have a structured response or a good response to one of their questions, I think that at that point, we might transfer it to a live person to help the user, because we would prefer they talk to somebody at that point to get the right answer versus a chatbot providing the wrong answer to them.
Yeah, this will prevent a lot of frustration.
Yes.
This is fascinating. I have a question. I know all of the Apex components of the chatbot can be easily tested or write automated tests for those. But how to test the whole chatbot? Is there a way I can write automation tests for the whole chatbot, or this needs to be a human or a manual test?
Especially when we talk about designing a chatbot with an NLP model, right? So natural language processing, it's hard to build that automated test around that. So we really try to get users to go and pressure test and test different types of dialogues and responses. So it is much more of a human test of kind of testing that chatbot to see what type of questions can it ask. Is it able to map that question to one of our intents and down the menu options and kind of coming up with that information? So right now, for the most part, we've seen a lot of human testing around that versus some of that automated testing capability.
And couple that with the ability to store analytics on that those conversations as you go through your UAT testing allows you to surface things that you might want to incorporate either in that one or the next one. So your testing is really more of a manual test. To try and automate it, you'd be trusting a natural language processing or artificial intelligence model to do your testing for your company. You kind of want to avoid that until you are comfortable with the results that are coming through. And if you wanted to apply like an AI input to a chatbot, you could definitely do that. And you can get a whole lot of information coming back from it and a whole lot of test cases. And you want to make sure that you're trending towards the right direction of what you want your company's brand to be and the speed at which issues can be resolved so that you don't have to have them transfer to a live agent eventually in the future. You want to have it be a better experience going through the bot.
Nice. I want to start building a modern chatbot today. What do I need to learn? What technical components do I need to consider for building a chatbot in the Salesforce ecosystem?
Yeah. So from a technology perspective,
yes.
The first part is really Salesforce chatbot UI, right? So Salesforce provides a drag and drop type of capability within their builder of the bot experience to actually create these different flows within the bot and how the bot is going to respond. So you build things like dialogues and variables and entities within the Salesforce UI itself prior to having to know any programming, right? So you can build drag and drop flows within the chatbot UI. And then when you want to get to more advanced capabilities, then you can pull in calls into Apex classes to go query some of that data. You can also do things like embed Lightning Web components within your bot, which is really starting to get some rich functionality. And you can build and launch Lightning flows within the bot as well.
Nice.
So these are all starting to get some rich capabilities. So when you get into those type of technologies, you need to know a little bit of Apex from a querying of your data in the background. For the Lightning Web components, it would be your HTML and JavaScript capabilities. And then Flows, Lightning Flows is more of your Salesforce UI experience. But right now, even without some of those programming skills, you can still build very rich chatbot experiences just with the Salesforce UI.
Yeah, and setting up a Einstein bot can be a pretty quick process. It's really where you want to drive value is where you're going to want to focus a lot of your efforts into how do I want to go retrieve data using Apex and invocable methods and variables in that those Apex classes, and then utilizing things like the LWC chat pack or chat LWC pack that exists in Salesforce Labs. They have a starter kit that is a beautiful conduit to transition a chatbot to utilize Lightning Web components, flows, rich text displays, even integrations to outside systems. So I highly recommend looking into those from a technology perspective if you're wanting to take it that next step deeper and build even further on the Einstein bot platform. So you've got a lot of really cool functionalities available to you and technologies that you can leverage to really make the chatbot do a lot of things that a lot of other companies can't do.
Wonderful. Any last tip or recommendation to our audience that want to start building proper chatbots?
Where to start? I think there is the best place to start is the Salesforce cookbook. So there is a cookbook out there that walks you through step by step on how to create a basic chatbot. And I think that is the best learning experience. Both Keegan and I have gone through that cookbook. We created our own simple chatbots and then started to extend from there. So we highly recommend searching for that Salesforce cookbook that they've published, and it walks you through all those steps.
It also shows you how to bring in Apex, like to allow you to step out of the chatbot and go into Apex and then use all of the beautiful functionalities that Apex offers, as well as a flow. So it walks you step by step, what you have to go into, what you have to click, what you have to drag, what you have to identify to show that initial step out of the chatbot to go utilize everything that you're used to using as a developer. So that cookbook is very valuable.
Excellent resources.
And I also want to preface that what Subi said at the beginning, I think, is the most important part about building these bots out is the design element. You don't want to start building a bot not knowing what your goal is going to be or what you want that chatbot to represent for your company. The more focus you have at the start of the design, the better off it your result's going to be and the more value you're going to drive for your company.
Very important. Very important. Well, Keegan, Subi, thank you very much. One last thing. While you are not building chatbots or helping your customers succeed, what do you do for fun in your spare time? What are your hobbies?
Well, for me, I love to do a lot of different things, and most of it is tied to outdoor activities. So you can find me surfing, you can find me fishing, you can find me hiking and backpacking, anything that allows me to use that other side of my passion, which is outdoors activities. Usually when building Lightning Web components and Apex classes and architecture designs, that usually doesn't allow you to do it in the mountains. So that's one of the things I have to balance.
Forced to disconnect. Yeah. For myself, I mean, I love to travel. I love to see the world. I try to travel anytime I can. I love food. So trying out great new recipes. And I just from very early on, I've been trying to be very creative. So I do a lot of drawing. I draw myself and I'm recently getting into learning music. So I'm trying to teach myself piano.
Wow, nice.
And I will double that comment on the food. There's one thing about Houston, Texas that a lot of people don't know about is the amount of food and the quality of food and the price of that food down here is unequivocal anywhere else in the world.
Now, you know, if you ever go to Houston, Texas, go and find some great food there.
If you come, we're definitely taking you out.
Awesome. Keegan, Subi, thank you very much for sharing your insights with us at the Salesforce developer community, and looking forward to have you too again in our podcast.
Sounds great, Julian. Great talking to you.
And that's it for now. If you want to learn more about this show, head on to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear all the episodes and read the show notes. Thank you, everybody, and talk to you the next time.